This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Steve Kathan. They're picking up the pieces after yesterday's violent storms along the East Coast.
It was like tree bomb in my house. I heard all this noise, didn't know what it was. Trees like just, you know, falling on the roof, destroyed my deck.
His home damaged in Glen Mills, Pennsylvania. CBS's Jim Crisullo.
Storms, including suspected tornadoes, hit from Georgia to New York. At least two people were killed. Thousands of airline flights were canceled or delayed. More than a million homes and businesses were without power at one point. This man lives in Charlotte, North Carolina.
And it just came out of nowhere. Garbage cans started going down the street. Wind picked up. Rain was going sideways. It was almost like a tornado.
More severe weather is likely today across the Plain States and in the deep south and southeast.
In Los Angeles, there's a 24-hour strike by some 11,000 city workers. Now the contract talks have stalled. John Baird of affiliate KNX at LAX.
You can see travelers rolling their bags right in the middle of these marchers. They're marching in a circle, and you've got people in the middle of that circle walking to the terminals trying to get to their flights. There doesn't seem to be a major inconvenience here yet, but we know that the restroom workers are on strike. We know the shuttle drivers are on strike.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has replaced his campaign manager. He's far behind Donald Trump in GOP presidential polls. CBS's Caitlin Huey Burns is in Ohio for today's election about whether to change the rules for a fall referendum.
Hi, are you registered to vote?
In November, Ohioans will decide if their state constitution should include protections for abortion access, something that, according to a recent poll, 58% of voters there support. It's a big number, but whether it's enough to pass will be determined by today's special election.
Republicans want to raise the threshold for passage from a simple majority to 60%. Moody's has downgraded ratings for 10 mid-sized banks. CBS's Jill Schlesinger says they've been closely watched since three bank failures earlier this year.
It's not just about higher interest rates, which make their business less profitable, but also the potential of a U.S. recession, which Moody's believe will happen in early 2024.
Well, CBS's Vicki Barker has more on the send-off today for a Grammy-winning singer.
Final applause for Sinead O'Connor as her funeral cortege blasting reggae music pulls up in front of the seaside Irish townhouse where she lived for 15 years. The 56-year-old singer and activist was found unresponsive in her London home late last month, her fans throwing flowers onto the hearse as it passed.
Wall Street, the Dow is down 414. This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
I'm James.
Civic Media Radio Stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
For WCFW and the Tap FM, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Here's what you need to know in the Chippewa Valley. This week, a Chippewa County judge will decide whether the lone suspect in last year's murder of 10-year-old Lily Peters will be tried as an adult or if the case will move to juvenile court. A 15-year-old boy is charged with killing Peters and leaving her body in the woods near her home in Chippewa Falls on April 24, 2022. He's being charged with homicide and two counts of sexual assault. If he's tried as an adult and convicted of homicide, he would have to serve a mandatory life sentence. Judge Stephen Gibbs ruled that autopsy photos and videos would be sealed and would address other evidence as the hearings continued this week. Hearings will continue this morning after four witnesses took the stand yesterday. A ruling on where the case will be tried won't happen until at least tomorrow, the earliest day that some of the witnesses will be able to appear in court. And the National Weather Service in the Twin Cities says that today will be hot, highs in the mid to upper 80s, but rain chances are on the way tomorrow and the rest of the week. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a longtime tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour,
if you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind,
walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Buckle my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app. Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
But we also proved that I'm not always nice.
But even when you're upset and even when you're ticked off, you still come from a place of compassion and love. Whereas I'm just old, bitter, and jaded.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome to the 11 o'clock hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry, along with Jane Madinaire. And it's been a week. Well, I guess it's been a week since Justice Janet Protasiewicz has been sworn in. And it's been 6 days since Law Forward filed their lawsuit to change Wisconsin's legislative maps and claims the map favor the Republicans. And I was, I think, in flight to Vegas when this was announced. And I was like, well, that was fast. And so we are so excited to talk to Law Forward, the law firm that is heading up the lawsuit. The executive director of Law Forward, Nicole Safar, who I've been saying it wrong. It's Safar, not Safar. Nice to meet you. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here and to meet you. And, you know, I will just say that we've been waiting 12 years and a day before we filed. So
that is that what, how long did you all know? Was it basically as soon as Judge Janet, now Justice Janet, was elected? Did you guys know that it was going to be the day after she was sworn in that this was the strategy from the get-go?
You know, we have been working on this at Law Forward since we were founded in 2020. And one of the core pieces of our mission was to be ready to do redistricting litigation after the census in 2021. Yeah. So really working on getting rid of these gerrymandered maps has just been, we've been working on it since the beginning. And after the Wisconsin Supreme Court gave us the decision in the Johnson v. WEC case in the spring of 2021. We kept working on it, and we've been doing the research and thinking about what a state constitutional claim could look like in Wisconsin. And, you know, we did what all good lawyers do. We did the research. We waited for the right opportunity with the right court, and then we got the voters who have been being harmed by this gerrymander, and we filed the case.
And here we go. And we're off to the races. And so we, I mean, I think for those of us who have been so passionate about this for a while and want fair maps so badly, everyone's very excited. But I think most of us are not lawyers. And so can you explain a little bit more of how the structure or the arguments being made in the case that you all have filed differs from redistricting cases in the past?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And, you know, I think a huge difference, at least from LaForward's perspective in the case that we wanted to bring this time, is that this case is centered on the voters. We have 19 plaintiffs from across the state of Wisconsin who are in districts where their voices are not represented because of the gerrymander. And there are different reasons. We make different claims that apply to some that don't apply to all of the plaintiffs. Different claims apply to different plaintiffs. But at the heart of the case, of this case, is we are asking the Wisconsin State Supreme Court, so the Wisconsin court system, to look at the Wisconsin Constitution and say that partisan gerrymanders violate our Constitution. So these are questions that our state court and our Wisconsin State Supreme Court hasn't answered yet.
Okay.
And that's really the main difference. The case that came out of after the census and the People's Maps Commission and the gerrymandered Republicans passing an even
more gerrymandered map.
That case didn't grapple really with the idea of partisan gerrymandering. It was there were other questions at stake. So that's a big difference in this case. And what we're essentially asking is we're asking the court to look at these current maps and determine that the Wisconsin Constitution protects the voters, the petitioners in the 19 districts that we have and all of the gerrymandered districts, but protects them from being treated differently just because of their political views.
So because before things have gone... Is there any chance that this could raise again to the U.S. Supreme Court? Because that's, I feel like, in times past, even in this last time, because in the saga that was our current maps, mm-hmm. originally, our Wisconsin State Supreme Court, Brian Hagedorn, the swing vote, sided with the liberal justices and at first adopted Tony Evers' maps, which were still gerrymandered, but because mm-hmm. of the lease change... they were a little bit less. And then that kind of got swooped up by the U.S. Supreme Court, and it had come back and be reversed and timeline, da-da-da-da-da. All of a sudden, we have an even more gerrymandered Republican map. What is the out? Like, is there a chance that something like that can happen again, even though this is clearly a case that's been structured to look at the Wisconsin Constitution?
Yeah. I mean, I think that is the question at the end of the day. This case is about the Wisconsin Constitution and whether or not it prohibits a partisan gerrymander. The Wisconsin State Supreme Court has the ultimate say on Wisconsin law and the Wisconsin Constitution. The U.S. Supreme Court doesn't get to say, oh, we have a different interpretation of the Wisconsin Constitution.
Okay.
That being said, like, this is this idea that the extreme right-wing gerrymander gets broken up in this case is an existential threat to the other side. And, you know, I don't put anything past them in yeah. how they are trying to prevent this and fight back. So I can't say that it is 100% impossible.
Yeah.
You know, federal claims could come up at some point during this litigation. We don't know. But it is really our intent to make sure that we put these questions of Wisconsin law in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, because at the end of the day, they are the ones who have who have the duty to interpret our Constitution.
We're talking to Nicole Safar, who is LawForward's executive director, who in LawForward is the law firm that is taking up the case for redistricting in Wisconsin. So part of the thing that I think is interesting that I think, Jane, when we talked about it briefly yesterday, you didn't realize was happening. So in the case, the idea of respondents, again, not a lawyer. So the Wisconsin Elections Commission and the state senators representing odd numbered districts are named as respondents in the lawsuit. What does that mean? And what does that mean for potentially depending on the ruling?
Yeah, that's a really great question as well. So the first part of the question is the Wisconsin Election Committee or Commission, the Wisconsin Elections Commission is named as the defendant because they make the maps, right? They're the ones who administer our elections. They, you know, take the paperwork for candidates who, when they get their nomination signatures, like they run the nuts and bolts of the system. So at the, they are the ones who are charged with the duty of, you know, enforcing who is in what district and then counting the votes in that district. The state senators who are in the odd numbered districts are senators who would not be up in the next election. So our whole argument to the court is that this is such an egregious injury. You need to fix it now. We need to have new maps that are not gerrymandered by the next election, which is the fall of 2024. And all of the assembly seats, that's fine. They're all up in 2024, mm-hmm. and half the Senate seats are up. So all of those elected officials will be, are essentially, their terms are up. They'll be out of office. There'll be an opportunity to get new people elected. But the odd-numbered senators are not. So to make sure that we get fair maps in all of the districts, we need to have a mechanism that also kicks those odd-numbered senators out of their seats. And then essentially it will be a special election for the odd-numbered Senate seats, or at least that is what we are proposing the court should do, and which is why they were named. We have to get them up.
And that, is that unprecedented? Or has that happened before as far as any other, I don't know, other states, or just as far as being like, guess what? Everybody's up for re-election.
So I can't speak to other states in the and their partisan gerrymandering cases, because I, you know, other, they might have different terms. And there certainly have been other states that have been successful using their state constitutions to say a partisan gerrymander is illegal. But the legal procedure, I guess, that we used, it's called quo warranto, and it has been used. If you think someone is illegally in an office, you can make this claim against them. So that has happened before, but I don't think it has necessarily in the case of the gerrymander.
I'm just trying to think of, if this is successful, how many races there's going to be, how many, like, this is, it's interesting to me as someone who just follows the news and has followed this so much of the ramifications of what this can mean. And so we have 2 minutes, so I'm going to ask one more question, but when we have to go to a break soon. So if I have to cut you off, I'm sorry. But why? So this is so far just focused on state assembly, state Senate. There was the decision made not to challenge at all the congressional maps. Why?
Yeah, so I think it just comes down to this idea that the way the partisan gerrymander has so damaged our state's ability for our state government to function, the way that the right-wing Republican gerrymander has consolidated its own power and stripped power from the executive, from agencies, from local governments, has so calcified and damaged our government that we just needed to stay laser focused on fixing that. And it's not to say that there aren't problems with congressional maps, and we might very well hear from other interested parties claims about that. But really, our focus is we have got to fix these state maps. We have got to get Wisconsin back on track to repair some of this harm that's been done.
All right. That is good to know. Laser focus is good. Focus on one thing. When we come back, Nicole Safaro will still be here to talk about the redistricting lawsuit. So let's talk about some of the hypotheticals that could happen depending on the ruling. So stay with us. If you have any questions, feel free to text them in. 844-967-2789. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Pick me, Mark, the president. I am the judge. I am the judge. Everybody.
She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a longtime tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
UPS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, sunshine with highs in the low to mid 80s. Mostly clear tonight, 61. Some afternoon storms possible tomorrow, otherwise mostly sunny and 83. For Wednesday night, partly cloudy, 57. On Thursday, mostly sunny, a high near 79. More showers and storms Thursday night.
It's 76 at our studios.
Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. We are talking to Law Forward's Nicole Safar on the redistricting lawsuit. Jane, did we have a text?
We do. And you can always check in 844-967-2789. Mark from the SAC is checking in. He says, given our Constitution requires maps to be both contiguous and compact, the maps we have currently are clearly unconstitutional. Any honest person would have to admit that the current maps are neither.
That is true. That's the word that I couldn't find yesterday. It was contiguous.
Mark is rarely wrong.
That is true. Mark fails it a lot.
Yep.
So I guess in that scenario, as far as the argument that these are unconstitutional, and what does the ideal timeline look like? Because obviously the turnaround time of filing this the day after there was a liberal majority in the hopes that these maps can be changed and altered it has to be done by April because people have to announce that they're running and know what their district is going to be for a fall election. And so you filed directly with the Supreme Court. So unlike the abortion case that we expect to end up in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court that's making its way through the lower courts, y'all are bypassing that. And so what does this actually look like as far as an ideal timeline?
Yeah, so an ideal timeline and what we've asked the court to do is to think about this case in two phases. And in the first phase, to really grapple with the idea of whether or not the partisan gerrymander is unconstitutional and to make a decision on the constitutionality of these maps. And then the second phase would be, okay, hopefully they've agreed with us and they say these are unconstitutional. And the second phase would be, what are we going to do about it? So what remedial action is the court going to take? And how is the court going to go about ensuring that we have fair maps that do not entrench a partisan gerrymander? So that's sort of part of the case that, you know, is a little less clear of how the court's going to approach that. We don't know. And, you know, we're going to ask them our experts, and we're going to ask them to do it in a way that we think is most useful. Other parties might jump in and ask them to do it a different way. But we really think that they can get done with this liability phase and then the remedial phase before the middle of March, okay, which is when the WEC and candidates who are going to be running in for re-election in 2024 would need to know who's in their district to start getting their signatures. So that's really our ideal timeline. That's what we're asking the court for. That's what we're going to be ready to do the work on that timeline. And we've seen both our own state court do that in the Johnson case, which was filed in August, and they were able to move it through by April. But we've also seen other state courts move that quickly on cases like these. So there is a roadmap to doing this in a timely manner that ensures we do not have these gerrymandered districts a day longer than we've already had.
No, we've already had them. So I guess, because that, I think, is the part that's still murky, and it sounds like you can't, there without a crystal ball, no one knows. But I think the idea of where does the new map, so say, like you said, our current map ruled to be unconstitutional, now what? Is it going back to the maps that were already introduced the People's Maps Commission, the Governor Evers maps? Is it maps that are already drawn? Is it a brand new map? Do the courts draw the map? Is that kind of the thing that, like, no one really knows, and it will be solely up to the justices to decide?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's basically it. And, you know, the justices will figure out, like, what they need to make a decision. They could decide that they want to do it themselves and like figure out what the criteria is and figure out what the maps are. They could bring in what's called a special master, so an objective like expert to create maps and then present them to the court. They could ask the different parties to submit their own maps, which is what happened in the Johnson case. The court asked for everybody who wanted to submit their own maps. They could ask the legislature and the governor to go back to the drawing board and resubmit new maps, but that seems a little bit unlikely since the political process has already failed us in that space.
Yeah. Is there a chance? I mean, is there any chance that criteria of least change will that get thrown out immediately, or is that still something that has to stay because of the last case?
So our constitution, our state constitution, says a lot of things about what's required for legislative maps, and least changes is not one of them.
Yeah.
it's a standard that the court created in the last go around. And under these circumstances that we're in, we cannot reimpose that court created standard again. It's just not an appropriate standard to put into the mix when we're making this partisan gerrymander argument.
So hopefully, no. That means no. My final question then, what is, because I think we said this yesterday, is there a chance that we end up with gerrymandered maps just the other way, that are like heavily favored towards Democrats, and it's just the same for those of us who have been crying fair maps and do not want things, just do not just want a Democratic majority? Is there a chance that that could happen, or are the things that are on the table, do you think that the likelihood, if we get new maps, they would actually be fair?
So at the heart of this case that we filed is the whole idea that a partisan gerrymander is unconstitutional. The partisan gerrymander that we have right now is a right-wing Republican gerrymander, but the heart of our legal argument is that you cannot have a partisan gerrymander under the Constitution. So, you know, I think that, like I said, don't know what the maps are going to look like, what people are going to propose, what the judges or justices are going to decide. But we don't want any partisan.
Unfortunately, we have to let you go. But Nicole Safar, that was so great. I'm sorry that we asked the question too late. But we will keep following up with you. Thank you for your work. And thank you for being on the show. We'll be back.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
CBS News Brief. Ron DeSantis has replaced his presidential campaign manager, CBS's Caitlin Huey Burns.
We didn't see much movement from DeSantis in terms of the polls, and a lot of people started to point their fingers, especially donors, at the campaign management.
Cleanup along the East Coast after yesterday's deadly and powerful storms. Maryland Governor Wes Moore.
We are working around the clock to make sure that our communities are getting everything that they need and everything that they deserve.
11,000 city workers are on a one-day strike in L.A. This includes airport and sanitation workers. Gilda Valdez is with the union.
We put all of our energy into our jobs every day. We come in, we laced up our boots during the pandemic. We do what we have to do to protect our city and make sure that the city runs.
In Ohio, voters today deciding whether a fall referendum on abortion access should need 60% to approve instead of a simple majority. CBS News Brief. I'm Steve Kathan.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
For WCFW and the Tap FM, I'm Jimmy Kuska. Here's what you need to know in the Chippewa Valley. This week, a Chippewa County judge will decide whether the lone suspect in last year's murder of 10-year-old Lily Peters will be tried as an adult or if the case will move to juvenile court. A 15-year-old boy is charged with killing Peters and leaving her body in the woods near her home in Chippewa Falls on April 24, 2022. He's being charged with homicide and two counts of sexual assault. If he's tried as an adult and convicted of homicide, he would have to serve a mandatory life sentence. Judge Stephen Gibbs ruled that autopsy photos and videos would be sealed and would address other evidence as the hearings continued this week. Hearings will continue this morning after four witnesses took the stand yesterday. A ruling on where the case will be tried won't happen until at least tomorrow, the earliest day that some of the witnesses will be able to appear in court. And the National Weather Service in the Twin Cities says that today will be hot, highs in the mid to upper 80s, but rain chances are on the way tomorrow and the rest of the week. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Kuska.
With one call, the Civic Media Network of stations can deliver your business's message to the entire state of Wisconsin.
Or your hometown.
Marketing plans that work for your business. One call can do it all. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a longtime tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess. Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes, don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
An RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
93.5 The Tap. This is 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And I'm so excited to have our next guest back because recently they hit a milestone of donating 1 million diapers to families in need. And so, of course, we are talking to Megan Johnson, who is the co-founder and executive director of Milwaukee Diaper Mission. Congratulations. That's a huge milestone in 3 years, 1 million diapers.
Thank you so much, Kristen. Yeah, actually, correction.
Oh.
It's
Under 3 years.
That is even more impressive. And so we've had you on the show a couple times before, but for people who maybe are not aware of what Milwaukee Diaper Mission is, what do you guys do?
Yeah, so Milwaukee Diaper Mission is a basic needs bank. That means that we provide a reliable source of basic essentials like diapers and period supplies to families in need across Milwaukee. We were founded in September of 2020. And as you mentioned, since that day, we've distributed over 1 million diapers. It's actually 1,115,000 diapers as of today to our community. We support about 2,700 children per month with diapering supplies and about 1,000 menstruators per month with period kits. So our impact is ever growing and changing, and we're really proud of what we've been able to accomplish so far.
Absolutely.
Megan, never having had children or hanging around with many people with children, how many diapers does a child go through on a daily basis on average?
Yeah, so there have been some studies, and the average number of diapers a child would go through in 1 month is about 80.
Wow.
It really depends on how old the baby is. A newborn baby is going to fly through 10 to 12 diapers in a 24-hour period. Kristen, pretty soon you're going to know what that's all about.
Yes, yes, yes.
But you know, as kids age up and age out of diapers, it's significantly less per day. So we're supporting thousands of families with the diapering supplies they need every month.
And what is the typical cost of diapers? Because that is, it's one thing as far as not necessarily always knowing how many you need, but also, I mean, is it something that inflation has only made more expensive like so many other things?
Actually, yeah, I think I just told you the wrong thing. It's $80 per month on average for the cost of diapers. Yes. And then the number of diapers children need, it just really varies on their age. So families are spending an average of about $80 a month on diapering supplies. Actually, it can be significantly more if children have any sort of allergy to the ingredients in some disposable diapers. Some disposable diapers have chlorine or other chemicals that are, you know, an irritant to baby's skin. So families are oftentimes forced to purchase the really high end chemical-free diapers, which can cost even more. It's a very big expense for families. And we know now that 1 in 2 families in the United States struggle to afford diapers. And those 1 in 2 families stretch across all socioeconomic backgrounds. So it's not just people living below the poverty line, folks who are, you know, middle or upper class or even struggling to afford diapers.
Well, and that was, I mean, this is not just Milwaukee, right? This is something that is across the country as far as how many people are dealing with the cost of, like, there's the unexpected cost. We've talked so much about childcare, but even food and formula and diapers.
Yep. And doctors.
And doctors and the things that people don't necessarily think about when they're so excited to have their little baby. And so what do you think? Why do you think it's been so successful in, like you said, in less than 3 years? Do you think it's just something that resonates with enough people if they have the means to be able to donate and have had kids, and it's something that just is so tangible to know how important diapers are?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think when people hear about the issue of diaper need and they hear about families who are having to choose between food and diapers on a weekly basis, they hear about families who are rinsing and reusing a disposable diaper because they don't have any diapers left to be able to send their child to childcare that day. It's a really heartbreaking issue to wrap your head around. And whether you have children of your own or you don't, it's really, you can't argue with the fact that these are basic essentials that, you know, human beings have a right to and deserve. And so, you know, people, I think, are really motivated by that. People are also motivated by our period program. Folks who don't have children or haven't spent a lot of time with kids, but maybe, you know, want to support our efforts of our period program, I think that's something that a lot of people jump on board to. So we have seen no shortage of interest in volunteering with us and donating products to us, and we're really grateful for that. The community has been amazing.
And one of the other things that you guys focus on is cloth diapering, which we talked about it the first time, I think about a year ago when you first came on, we talked about it. I'm still interested, especially because what I remember from our first conversation about cloth diapering is that specifically, so long as it's breast milk, you can actually just throw the whole diaper in, and
correct,
because the way the poop dissolves before they start eating solids and everything like that.
Yep.
And so let's rehash the arguments for why, as gross as it might sound, cloth diapering might be a good option. And it's one of the reasons why you all teach it and focus on making it an easier option for people.
Well, and two, yeah. And I'm sorry to jump in here, but I had no idea that there were chlorine and things in disposable diapers that could be irritants like that. You would just think that it's a diaper.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, disposable diapers are crisp and white and clean, but we know they are full of chemicals to help the baby stay dry, to help absorbency. Not all brands, but a lot of brands. And so cloth diapers are a great option for families if they want to save some money, because you can save thousands of dollars on diapering supplies over the course of one child's diapering years if you use cloth diapers, or if you use partial cloth, partial disposable. For health reasons, some babies are, you know, irritated by disposable diapers, so families opt to use cloth. Better for the environment. Some argue that, you know, less waste is being created, although we are still using water and detergent to wash those diapers. So there are some arguments there. But cloth diapers have come a long way. They're much more modern. They're more convenient. They're a lot easier to use than the old-fashioned safety pin diapers. So I encourage anyone who was cloth diapered a long time ago or is interested in cloth diapering, go to our website, learn a little bit more about cloth. And we do offer virtual cloth diaper basics class every other month, so the community can join those and learn a little bit more about cloth and see if it's the right fit for them.
And so for the families that Milwaukee Diaper Mission supports, is that a pretty viable option? Because I imagine, like, when I think about doing it as an option, Mike may or may not be on board with this. We have not talked about it yet. But, you know, we have a washer dryer in our house. So it becomes something that feels like, all right, well,
throw it in there.
I'm not lugging things like a dirty, soiled... Yep. cloth diaper that sits in the hamper until I can take it to a laundromat. And so is that something that is considered, like, with the communities that you typically help, is a consideration, or is it something that you feel like you can just wash it out in the sink and it's not that big of a deal? How do you get around that?
Yeah, so access to washing facilities is an issue. We recognize that not all families have a washer and dryer in their home, that they are having to utilize a laundromat, and that might not be the easiest or most convenient or cost-effective way to wash cloth diapers. We do offer a hand washing option. So there are cloth diapers that can be more easily hand washed in a sink or a bathtub and then hung up to dry. They dry very quickly. Those are more of like the old-fashioned version of cloth diapers without all the bells and whistles, but it is an option. We believe very strongly in dignity of choice as an organization. So while we recognize that cloth is not for everyone, we still want to make sure it's an option for families so that they can choose what's best for themselves or for their baby. So offering a cloth option and giving that education and support around using cloth diapers is very important to us. And we really pride ourselves in the fact that we do that.
Absolutely. We're talking to Megan Johnson, who is the co-founder and executive director of Milwaukee Diaper Mission. And one of the things I'm very excited about, so in, you know, we've talked before on the show, my husband and I are very social people. My husband's an event planner. He loves to throw a good party.
He knows lots of folks.
And I kind of like the idea of, like, not the traditional baby shower, but co-ed where men come and, you know, it's more of a get together. But I didn't want to throw something because, like, we are in the process so far of being pregnant. I feel like it has been an exercise of gratitude and, like, how lucky I've been, right? Because it's like at each step of the way of knowing just kind of pregnancy in general, getting pregnant, staying pregnant, having a healthy pregnancy, not being so what you throwing up the entire time, gestational diabetes, and then childcare and being able to afford diapers afterwards. It's like we've been very, very lucky. And so we were kind of saying, like, well, what could we do? Because we kind of want to see our friends before we go hibernate with this baby for the whole fall. we don't really need that much stuff. And so I'm so excited because on this Sunday, we are hosting a fundraiser for Milwaukee Diaper Mission at the Nomad, which is on Brady Street. It is a white party, so it's open to the public if you guys would like to come. But wear white and bring diapers. And so what size diapers are you guys in need right now that people should be bringing?
First of all, thank you so much. This is an amazing idea for an event, and supporting our mission in this way is so impactful because we are currently desperately in need of a few items. Size 3 diapers. We're actually doing a 100-box challenge right now. So if people want to donate diapers, size 3 would be amazing. We're also desperately in need of baby wipes. I think sometimes people forget that you need wipes to change a diaper.
Yeah.
And so we sometimes kind of struggle to get enough wipes to be able to distribute monthly. So baby wipes would be great. Honestly, any of the larger sizes, 3, 4, 5, 6, those are, babies are in those the longest. There are most requested sizes, but there are least donated sizes because they are a little bit pricier and you get less in a box. If you're buying a box of size 6 diapers, it might have, you know, 75 diapers in it, but you could get a box of newborn diapers with 300 diapers in it and it's less. So it's something that we really want to educate our supporters on, what our current needs are. And when we're able to partner with people to host drives like this and really get the word out about what we need currently, that's amazing. So thank you, Kristen.
Is what really age awesome. Is that? I should probably know this. What typical age is a size 6? Is that like a 2-year-old? So, I should probably know this.
It depends on the body shape and weight of the child. But I can tell you that my 3, almost 4-year-old is still in diapers at night and he wears a size 6 or 7.
Okay.
And has been since he was, you know, 2.5 or something. So kids are really in them for a long time. And until they start to potty train, you know, you obviously still need diapers for overnight or naps or whatever. So.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm going diaper. Now I'm going diaper shopping after the show.
There you go. Jane's going to be there.
I'm very excited.
For people who are listening, but who don't live in Milwaukee, maybe can't come on Sunday, I will post the link for anyone who wants more information for the event itself, but they can still donate money. My grandmother, I got my birthday check in the mail and a check for you guys that I'll have to hand you on Sunday. But as far thanks, Grandma. Where can people donate if they, now that they know about what you all do, you can mention Kristen and Mike in the notes, but where can people go if they want to donate, but can't, because they can't actually donate in person a box of diapers?
Yeah, so we have a donate page on our website, and we can turn dollars into a lot of diapers. So if folks go to the store like Walmart or Target and buy diapers, that's wonderful. However, if they make a monetary contribution to us, we can get about double the amount of diapers and help even more babies. So monetary donations are key for us to be able to keep increasing our impact and support more families. We also have an Amazon wish list, and on there right now we have size 3 diapers and baby wipes. So it's a very targeted ask of, if you're going to buy via Amazon, send them to us. To our warehouse, it's exactly what we need at any given time.
Perfect. So you will send me those links. I will put all of these links in our show notes today. We did invite unofficially, I don't know if they saw it, we did invite Mariah and Giannis to come to the event because I know they are big supporters of Milwaukee Diaper Mission. No guarantees if they'll actually be there on Sunday. I don't know. You know, they might be a little busy,
Kristen and Mike will be there.
Kristen and Mike will be there. But how is that partnership going? Because they're pregnant again, too.
Yes, they are. Yeah. So actually, this whole relationship with them started because they wanted to host a diaper drive for us in honor of the birth of their second child. So this is a very similar type event. It was a little larger scale.
I would imagine theirs was a little bigger.
But they're wonderful. We're so grateful to be able to work with them. We do an annual diaper drive with them every year called the Big Give Back. We're doing it again this fall, where folks are going to be able to give dollars and diapers to support our work later this fall, and the Antetokounmpo family are amazing and we're so lucky to have them with us.
Absolutely. All right, Megan Johnson is the co-founder and executive director of Milwaukee Diaper Mission. Will I see you Sunday?
Yes.
Great. I can't wait. All right, we're gonna take one more break and come back after that and wrap up today's show. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Did you know the Wisconsin State Fair is 172 years old? It still celebrates the industries important to our state's history, like agriculture. But every year, new attractions and items are added. This year, there's more than 100 new foods to try. So what do you think topped the culinary list last year? Flamin' hot Cheetos, chicken on a stick, deep-fried old-fashioned?
or Pino Pretzel Popper Brat? The answer's coming up. The Wisconsin State Fair didn't start in its current home of West Allis. The first was in Janesville along the Rock River, then moved to different locations the next 40 years. The original cream puff has been around almost as long. Close to 400,000 are gobbled up every year. So which food was number one last year? It was the Pino Pretzel Popper Brat. It came out on top. The State Fair is a true slice of Wisconsin, and it runs through August 13th. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network. She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a longtime tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
93.5 The Tap.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, sunshine with highs in the low to mid 80s. Mostly clear tonight, 61. Some afternoon storms possible tomorrow, otherwise mostly sunny and 83. For Wednesday night, partly cloudy, 57. On Thursday, mostly sunny, a high near 79. More showers and storms Thursday night.
Currently, 78 degrees.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I'm Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And you just informed me, so that was the music we had for the last segment. And I didn't, you know, you always have a reason.
Usually
you have a reason for what our bumper music is. And I didn't know what your reason was. And you just told me.
I would love to know if anybody who is listening can text me what the name of that song is. I'm curious. Because I can't be the only one who knows the name of that song.
Did you already know this song existed?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
What is it? How did you know that?
Because I think my parents used to play Henry Mancini albums.
And I like, it's very, not Bond, but it's like 1960s.
Very much so.
Mod, dancing type music.
I don't know that it was ever used in a film, but if anybody else can name that song, text it in or call. I'm just curious. 844-967-2789. And there is a very specific reason that I used this song.
I know.
Because you're having a baby. And your theme is elephants.
The nursery theme is elephants. And because I am, that is my, by far and away, my favorite animal for many reasons. Because they are matriarchal. They are sensitive. They are caring. They're highly intelligent. They have complex emotions. And also because baby elephants are clumsy and don't know how big they are, which I feel like is a metaphor for me and my life sometimes. And so, yeah, so the nursery theme is baby elephants. And so it seems like we might have a caller, Jane, knowing that someone knows the name of that song.
Yes, Eric from Milwaukee is joining us, and we're getting all kinds of texts coming in too. Good morning, Eric. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, the name of the movie is called Baby, or the name of the song is Baby Elephant Walk. It's from a John Wayne movie.
It's from a John Wayne movie.
Oh, I had forgotten that.
There you go.
He's on a it's not Daktari, but he was on a safari, and that was one of the the music they played when they had the baby elephants.
There you go. That is good trivia. I would have never known that.
I had to text her when we were in the break saying I picked this song especially for you.
Oh, that's so fun. Thanks for calling, Eric, and thanks for listening.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
And thanks to all the texters, too. We got a bunch of them coming in.
A bunch of people got it right?
Yeah, a bunch of people got it right.
That is awesome. Yeah. So Baby Elephant Walk. Well, I guess maybe we'll have to add that to the theme of the nursery. Maybe she'll like that song.
I have some plans for what I'm going to... I'm not going to just buy diapers for Sunday. I got some elephant shopping to do. after the show.
We're going to be, there's a lot of elephants that are already in there. This is because Deb Bry, who will also be there Sunday, anyone who's ever wanted to meet Deb Bry.
I haven't seen Mom Bry in a while.
She is the decorator. I like what I like. But I hate shopping.
And putting it together.
Because it's typically like I have other stuff to do beyond that. So it's a great match when she is takes initiative on these things.
Well, and she loves it.
And she's good at it. And so the baby blanket is elephant. There is an elephant throw rug.
Okay.
That's going to go over the carpet.
What about lamps?
I don't know if there's a lamp yet.
Or nightlight.
I don't think there's a nightlight either.
Oh, I got ideas.
Oh, man. There is a couple pictures that are going to go on the wall. I already had some elephant figurines that I've collected over the years, so I'm sure those will be in there. But it might be a little much. It might be a little...
You need a lamp with a with a trunk is how you turn it on and off. That is... Oh. And then I'll be dazzled and it'll be perfect.
Watch this kid just hate elephants because she's like, this was too much. He really overdid it.
Mom, and, enough.
Yeah, enough with the elephants. But yeah, so that is, we would love to have you if you're in the Milwaukee area. Nomad is a really fun, if you've never been to it, it's on Brady Street. They have like Nomad Beach that they created during COVID. And so it's one of the little streets that they've now blocked off. And since it's the summer, it's supposed to be like 80 degrees on Sunday. So we'll just be outside enjoying the weather.
And there is a great empanada place on Brady Street.
There's also that.
So I don't know, does Nomad serve food?
They don't serve food. They were serving food during, because they've been hosting games and doing all the soccer, because it started as a soccer bar. Both soccer bar, but also I remember talking to the owner, Mike Idol, of the reason he started it decades ago now, was he loved the idea of hostels in other countries that you would just show up and, you know, before social media, before cell phones, like when you showed up at a place in a country or a city and there was a place that you were told, like, this is where you go and this is where you'll figure out, you'll meet other people you can, you know, you'll room with, you'll be able to party with, you can, like, find information. And it was like a hub for people who had come out of town, that it was just like the known spot that you could go and as a traveler. And that was kind of the whole reason that he started Nomad, is have that for Milwaukee. And he also loves soccer. And obviously soccer has always been such an international sport that it was like kind of a soccer bar, kind of a spot for people who were new to Milwaukee or were visiting Milwaukee could go hang out. And so it's a great bar. We're super excited to be having them let us have our party there.
And it's from when to when?
It's from 1 to 5.
1 to 5.
There's going to be a DJ there. Mike will probably be drinking Aperol spritzes all day, pretending that he's somewhere on the Mediterranean.
Okay. Whatever works for you, Mike.
Whatever works. I was like, are you going to wear like a linen suit? What are you wearing?
Then he needs a hat, too, if he's going to do that.
Like a
fedora.
Mm-hmm.
For
like
sure.
Like a white straw fedora.
Oh, yeah.
You look ridiculous in that. But yeah, so like I said, if you can make it, you are welcome to join us. If you cannot make it and would like to still donate to Milwaukee Diaper Mission, we would be very grateful. As I said, I will put their Amazon wish list up. You can send a check. I will put the link up for monetary donations to our show notes for today at asgoeswisconsin.com/listen. But like I said, I am very excited to be able to pay it forward, because like I've been very, knock on wood, I've been very incredibly lucky and fortunate through this whole being a first time mom so far, and like to be able to pay that forward and like help out other people.
It's wonderful.
Feels good.
Yeah.
Because we also don't need more stuff.
Except for an elephant
lamp. Except for an elephant lamp that the trunk is the switch that goes on and off.
It's so great.
All right. Well, come back tomorrow. Tomorrow we got Greg Bach here. We also have comedian Taylor K. Phillips on her new Midwest Conversations book. So that'll be really fun. But thank you to everyone who was with us today. As always, thank you to Dan Schaefer, who's here on Tuesdays, Nicole Safar from Law Forward, Megan Johnson from Milwaukee Diaper Mission. Thank you to people who called and texted. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. to do it all over again. This has been As Goes Wisconsin. Thank you.
The newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a longtime tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Pursuing the truth wherever it may lead. The Todd Alba Show, weekday afternoons from 1 till 3. Join the conversation. Get involved. The Todd Alba Show on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.